We're going to get an update now on another explosion, two explosions actually, in Tianjin, China. They happened about a week ago at a large warehouse there storing hazardous chemicals. More than 110 people have died, and the number is expected to continue to climb. Julie Mackinnon is covering the story for the Los Angeles Times.
There's still thousands of soldiers on the scene combing through the site, trying to determine what's in the air and water. The latest water samples show 27 times the standard of cyanide.
Are those state water inspectors who are checking the water for cyanide, or are these independent inspectors?
Oh, state.
So, I mean, the fact that the state is even admitting that, that seems to be pretty atypical.
Well, China's getting a little bit better about being transparent about these figures. But of course, there's still a lot of skepticism. And there's so much we don't know about what was at this site, why it exploded, and what's still left there. On top of that, when you go around the town on several street corners, there's people handing out not just paper masks, but full-on plastic chemical gas masks. And when you see people handing those things out in your neighborhood, I think it, you know, raises some questions about what's in the air.
Yeah. What were you doing while you were on assignment? Did you grab one of those masks?
I did grab one of those masks because I don't know what's in the air. The first day I was on the site, I was able to get very, very close to the blast site. The perimeter was extremely porous, and I basically drove right up to it, as did many other journalists and just curiosity seekers who wanted to see what the heck was going on there. In hindsight, that was probably not the most prudent thing to do.
So, Julie, I know you've spoken with several family members of victims in Tianjin. What have they been telling you?
Well, it's a real mixed bag. You know, there's people there who were quite well off, white collar workers who had their homes damaged. They've taken upon themselves to pay for hotels or otherwise figure out some accommodations. But there's another segment of society there that's extremely vulnerable. We were at a shelter yesterday with two migrant worker families. One of them had been living in a shipping container that had been converted into housing. And the other family had been living with four other families crammed into a three-bedroom apartment. And both of them had basically lost everything in the blast and were now living at an elementary school that itself was damaged in the blast.
I know you've been reporting family members have been writing up a list of demands from the government. What are they asking for? And is it unusual for the government to be called out in public like that?
I think the rural migrants aren't the ones spearheading the charge with the list of demands. What we're seeing, though, is property owners who purchased quite expensive apartments in very nice buildings less than a kilometer away from where these dangerous chemicals eventually blew up. Now these people are faced with the prospect of massive damage to their homes, and they want some kind of compensation from the government for this. In some cases, people want the government to buy back their apartments.
Is it at all likely the government might buy back those properties?
Well, the government has in the previous situations with like fires and other kinds of disasters. But the question of who's going to pay for all this damage is quite an interesting one. I mean, you know, it's kind of like a giant bomb dropped in the middle of this area and then a tornado whipped around the periphery of it. So the question of sorting out who's going to pay for all this is a massive one because the company in question has been reduced to ashes.
You know, just in terms of responding to disasters, I'm just wondering if you could compare the response by the Chinese government to this disaster with that horrible ferry disaster in June, 400 people dead and what's considered the worst maritime disaster in decades.
You know, it's interesting. In the case of the ferry sinking, we saw great attempts by the government to sort of keep victims' relatives out of the media, sequestered sort of in different hotels. In Tianjin, the government seems to have not inclined to do that. And the press corps really in Tianjin has been quite aggressive in asking questions at press conferences and such about what kind of regulations and zoning was in place and how this could have happened. So I don't think it's going to be a revolution in terms of media freedoms, but I definitely have to give the local reporters some kudos for their, you know, aggressive stance.
Julie Mackinnon with the Los Angeles Times covering the continuing news of the massive explosions last week from Tianjin. Thanks very much, Julie.
My pleasure.